were in this room, and it registered that it was playing, but I don't think it was playing. So the pause was off. So we'll continue with the second half of this broadcast and take care of that later. The news this week had information on John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and Mary Jo Kopechne. It's very seldom that you get news items on those four murders in one week, but I guess that's the karma of Rush Harp, who passed away a few weeks ago. He's the fellow who had thousands of postcards made, maybe 100,000. Who killed JFK, RFK, MLK, MJK? JFK's John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and Mary Jo Kopechne. And he had a photograph of himself in front of this sign, not LHO, that's not Lee Harvey Oswald, not JER. And he had the people that we said did these murders, whether it was Sirhan, SBS Sirhan, or James Earl Ray, or EMK as Edward Kennedy, not those people. He had some notes down below. Well, this week, he's been passed away about a month ago. The karma must be there. We always used to talk about karma, so I'll do those news stories for you. And I also will be asking you again to, at the end of the hour, if you want to call in. I'll take questions from you and answer them on the air if you donate to the station. Now, one of the most obscene articles this week in the newspaper was from the New York Times, Kennedy assassination site to become a museum. That's okay. But what they're going to do in Texas is they're going to take the sixth floor of the Texas School Book Depository, which the authorities say was the site from which President Kennedy's fired a rifle. The New York Times has it wrong. From which Lee Harvey Oswald fired the rifle, they said. It will be converted into a museum to commemorate this slaying of John Kennedy. The Dallas County Historical Commission set aside $3 million to put a museum on the sixth floor. So if you bring your family or children to Dallas, you will see the sixth floor museum where, they said, the rifle and Lee Harvey Oswald work clipboard were discovered on the southwest corner of the floor. I'm sure they're not going to tell you if you visit there that the rifle had no fingerprints and that there was no indication that this shot came from that window. This was all set up. This was not an accurate story. The fatal headshot came down by the grassy knoll. That's not where the museum is going to be for all time. And if you put $3 million into a museum, then the history is set. Anybody who goes there will be told that Oswald was at that lair. Even the House Select Committee on Assassinations, when they spent $3 or $4 or $5 million on Martin Luther King and John Kennedy's assassination, ended up with a conspiracy and a shot over at the grassy knoll. And the ballistics, the weaponry, the capability of Oswald's gun, the way the bullets went, the amount of bullets, the trajectory of the bullets, the direction of the president's head, everything came from the ground. But by building a museum on the sixth floor, it would be very hard to change that museum once you've put $3 million into the sixth floor. That is the most massive brainwashing job I've ever heard about. Then there was a movie on television, The Rise and Fall of Rosemary Clooney. And this was this past week. And she tells about her career in singing and her long struggle with drugs, with Hollywood, and starting with pills and Valium and Librium and Percodin and Seconal and so forth. Rosemary Clooney, according to a description of the broadcast, was on TV this week, hit the bottom following the collapse of her marriage and her friend and hero, Robert Kennedy, when he was assassinated. I heard her say on television, she was talking about this broadcast coming up, and she said she was in the Ambassador Hotel when Robert Kennedy was shot. It decimated her life. She freaked out. Now, who knows if she saw Sirhan, or what happened? You see, there were people like Ted Chirac and the Ambassador that saw Thane Caesar having a gun fall to the ground and the trajectory of the shot coming from the back of the head, which is what the autopsy said, and Thane Caesar, the guard from Lockheed, who now allegedly, I heard, runs a Nazi party out in Bakersfield, down in Riverside, and is very active down there. She, according to what she said, she was in the Ambassador. It was so traumatic for her. Nothing was left for her but the grim walls of a mental hospital And this is where her story begins and unfolds. So from the Ambassador Hotel, and Robert Kennedy had dinner with Sharon Tate that night before he went to the Ambassador, and Roman Polanski, Rosemary Clooney was there, and then she gets the pills, and then the mental hospital, and maybe electroshock, so that her whole struggle with this scene came when Robert Kennedy was shot, her friend, and maybe her memory was erased. Maybe she was at the wrong place at the wrong time, and therefore her memory was released, erased. Maybe something happened to her. They were anxious to put her into a mental hospital. Following that is when her troubles began. Now, as far as Martin Luther King, there was a story, the motel where Martin Luther King was assassinated is up for sale. It's run in down. It's in the black part of town. They use it for prostitution. They haven't kept it up. It's worth very little. They sort of desecrated the place. Now a group of black civil rights leaders want to get the hotel and keep it. Blacks own the hotel, and the newspaper said even after the white-owned hotels and motels opened to the blacks, Martin Luther King chose to stay at the black-owned Lorraine. He was here to support a strike. Now, the Lorraine Motel is up for sale this week. The truth was that Martin Luther King didn't choose to stay at the Lorraine Motel. He chose to stay at the Holiday Inn Motel. And the FBI sent memos just before he was murdered. They were on the scene reporting to J. Edgar Hoover, who hated Martin Luther King and who obviously had the job to murder him. And the FBI reports they suggested neutralizing and killing him and replacing with another leader. So March 29th, they had a record that he was to stay at the Holiday Inn. So they ran a newspaper story, an article, "The fine Hotel Lorraine in Memphis is owned and patronized exclusively by Negroes, but Martin Luther King didn't go there for his hasty exit. Instead, King decided the plush Holiday Inn Motel, owned and operated almost exclusively and patronized, telling the black people, boycott the black stores, boycott the white merchants, but he was to stay at the white hotel." And they had an article that J. Edgar Hoover worked out a hypocrisy story to publicize the hypocrisy of Martin Luther King going to the very high-class Holiday Inn instead of the Negro Hotel in Memphis. So he was coaxed by some Judas in the crowd to change his room reservations. It was April 3rd, 1968. The FBI sent another message that they were handling the case, which means they got his reservation changed and somebody goaded him. You can't have a strike against white people. If you're staying at a white hotel, you have to go to the Lorraine Motel where the arrangements were made, and that's where the assassin was to blow his head off. They very nicely had it at a black hotel and embarrassed him to be there, and the FBI arranged that. They had press information about it. They knew about it ahead of time, and he didn't choose that. His so-called advisors that worked or informers with the FBI got him to the Lorraine Motel, and that's what happened to him. Then Ted Kennedy threw in his effort, if it was an effort. He was going maybe to run for president against Ronald Reagan, but there was a very interesting article called "Guns and the Man, Kennedy Plays It Safe." This was in the San Jose Mercury. Some of you may or may not have seen it, and also was part of it was in the New York Times. Ted Kennedy, they asked him about would he run or why. He gave press conference. He wasn't going to run. Would he run in the future date? And then there was a comment of Kennedy. He says, "This guy Mondale might not make it in 1984, the senator was told, that if he wanted, but you will definitely not make it. Mondale might not make it, but you will not get it." And Kennedy replied, "I don't know about that." And then the answer was, "There's only one way for you to really do it." Someone told him, "Forget the index cards, the big speeches. Run on what's inside of you. Run on your heart and your soul and your stomach." And Ted Kennedy said, "I can't do that." "Why not?" he asked. "The guns," he said. "The guns, the guns, the guns." And that was his answer. This was reprinted in several newspapers. And the point is that then Ted Kennedy said there's only so much a person to do. Kennedy knows it is largely left to fate and too much of it to the demons that lurk in the dark impulses of faceless strangers' minds. Now that is where the character flaw is. The demons are not lurking somewhere. The decisions are not left to fate. The decisions are made in the Defense Department and in the White House and the National Security Council and the Committee of 40, which is five scumbags. They decide who kills. John McCone, former director of the CIA, lives on this peninsula over at Pebble Beach. If he listened to this program, he'd be the first to agree the decisions aren't made by demons, unless you call those people demons that lurk. They're not demons, and they're not faceless. They have names. One of the people that hid the murders died this week, Leon Jaworski, and I'll do a little bit about that scumbag. Goodness knows what he was thinking when he was chopping wood. He and Reagan, if they can't chop heads and the guillotine isn't in, they chop wood. That's their, they're out there chopping wood. But there are people. They have names like Alan Dulles and John McCloy or Leon Jaworski covering it up. And these people, Edwin Wilson and Frank Turbel and Theodore Shackley, the people that planned Kennedy's murder, you could list 100 of them and 100 who covered it up. They're not faceless, and they're not strangers. And Ted Kennedy is playing a stupid game by saying they're faceless, you know, and they're strangers. Another article in the newspaper, Chappaquiddick memories linger. It is true, by 1988, the death of Mary Jo Kopechne in 1969 will have be a long time from when she died. The death will be a long time ago. But she will still be dead, and Kennedy will still have to explain 9 hours that it took to call the police. All the debts rest there. There's another article in the newspaper. Is it true that Tony Lasowitz of the White House Plumbers, Richard Nixon's right-hand man, private detective, went to Monaco to investigate whether Ted Kennedy had any role in the death of Princess Grace? That's pretty far out. And the answer is no, that's a ghoulish joke you're hearing. But Lasowitz was at the scene of Chappaquiddick, and he poses a reporter for 4 days to ask Ted Kennedy embarrassing questions at press conferences. And Ted Kennedy said he can't run because of the inquiries about Chappaquiddick, but he's too chicken to say anything about what went on. And furthermore, it's an interesting thing, the decision not to run. He went off to a Greek island, and he allegedly went with, there's a picture of a female he was with, and also a man who accompanied him was John Tunney. And it's when he came home, he ran for the election of the Senate, he won it. He went to Greece with Tunney and with this woman, and then he came home and immediately said, I will not run for president. Now, in the Beyond the Gemstone files that Bruce Roberts put together, he talks about the accident in quotes, at Chappaquiddick. In 1979, in July, the accident, Mary Jo Kopechne had been working for, first with John Kennedy, later with Bobby Kennedy. And when she was working on papers of Robert Kennedy's after his assassination, she read about Kennedy and the mafia involvement, and she said, this isn't Camelot, this is murder. And then she was concerned what was going on. And she went to Chappaquiddick Island and overheard conversation, and she wanted to get off. And according to Bruce Roberts, the man who was calling Ted Kennedy at Chappaquiddick was John Tunney, former senator, and he was talking to Joe Alioto in San Francisco and John Tunney, and the Democratic bigwigs, and the Gemstone file mentions them. And it mentions Cyril Magnin, my father's first cousin, Alioto's friend, and that can of worms, and John Tunney. And at the island of Chappaquiddick, he was talking politics to these people. And Mary Jo Kopechne, according to Bruce Roberts, heard a lot about what was going on, and had Mary Jo's nose was broken. She was waiting in the car 2 hours before she was officially drowning. There was an air pocket, and Ted Kennedy called Cardinal Cushing to help him, and Burke Marshall, a friend of Aristotle Onassis's. Again, they were thick with people over in the Greek islands, and Burke Marshall has locked up the evidence for the researchers on John Kennedy's assassination and kept that a secret, and now he was keeping the Chappaquiddick thing secret. In fact, Bruce Roberts said that John Tunney's sister, her name is Joan, heard her brother's end of the phone conversation made from her home in Tiburon in California to the Chappaquiddick cottage. The next day after Mary Jo was dead, Joan ran away. She went to Norway. She was kidnapped by mafia hoods named Mari and Adamo. They locked her in Marseille in a heroin factory for 60 days. They turned her loose. Joan's husband complained. They cut his head off. This is all true. His head had been cut off with an axe. And she was locked up eventually, locked up in a nut house. belonging to the Marquis de Blandford. And then Mari and Adamo, the guys that kidnapped her, were put into metal in a New Jersey auto junkyard, a la Jimmy Hoffa style. There was a whole series of deaths around John Taney, his sister's kidnapping, the husband's death, the men who kidnapped her, their deaths. It was a horrendous series of murders that followed the Chappaquiddick affair. And so who was with Ted Kennedy when he was in Greece on a couple of days vacation? The same John Taney. The same names keep coming through. Every year, or you get these new incidences where the names reappear in a new shape, taking new trips together and so forth, like Taney and Ted back to the Greek islands. And this is where his connections were at the time of the Chappaquiddick, with Aristotle Onassis and Jackie Onassis, who was over there, and he's been awfully close to her. Now, a man that I wanted to talk about more this evening, but we'll get back to it later, and also the new evidence on the shooting of the Pope, I'll do that next week, is Leon Jaworski. And before I do this, Leon, I'll do some background on Leon Jaworski for the next 10 or 12 minutes. I want to remind you that this is a pledge week here at KAZUFM. 375-3082 if you want to make a phone call. If it's a toll call and long distance, write Box 206, Pacific Grove, California, 93950. And if you want me to devote a section of a broadcast to things that you want to know in return for your pledge, I'll be glad to do that. And that way, people call my house and ask me, what do you think of this? What do you think of this news event or that? From now on, I'm going to say, make a pledge, and I'll answer your question. Because I've always done my work free. We're not paid at this station, and none of my research, I don't make any money off the tapes. They're done at a commercial place. I donate my time. But you can give to the station, and I will give you my information, because I believe it's that important. I don't charge you, and I never did, for anything that I did. And if you listen already, and if you made a pledge already, and many of you did, then I always talk to you and copy any articles you want, and I get letters from you, and we exchange back and forth, because we have that rapport. The World Watchers are a group that do exchange information. And, oh, before I get to Leon Jaworski, I want to mention something that was in my mind when I took the name World Watchers. It used to be called Dialogue Assassination and then Dialogue Conspiracy. But one day, and it was a couple of years ago, Jeanne Nittich, Nidetch, who formed the Weight Watchers, sold her corporation. And she sold it for $72 million. She lost 72 pounds on a diet given out by the city of New York. And she sold her corporation for $72 million. And at the time, I was thinking, you know, at the end of the month, I'm down to like minus $2 or $4. Or juggling things around to make the end of the month before the next barrage comes, okay? And so you can get this book or this article or pay the necessities of whatever it is. And I thought about Jeanne Nittich. She had a plan where she got together with a group of women, six women, who were so, they were fat, so it means they were overeating calories. They could give it, say, to Paul Krasner's Realist or the Village Voice or the, not the Village Voice, but the L.A. Free Press or the Berkeley Barber, these other areas. They were eating so much that they were overweight. So they decided they'd get together once a week. And if you join Weight Watchers, which I've done, and I've lost weight on that program at different times, you have a membership like $12, or like you join Kazoo, it's $15. Okay. Now they pay $5 every week, whether they gain or lose. And if you go out of town, you still pay. And whether you come or go, it's 16-week contract, and it's $5 a week for 16 weeks. And you get weighed. And then they discuss whether you should eat tofu or steak, or whether peas have more calories than string beans, or whether tapioca has more calories than fresh pineapple. And the point is that everything that you need to know is free in a library, free from the government, any calorie book. Okay, but the camaraderie of six people getting together and figuring out how to lose weight began another group of six people getting together, figuring out what to do. Somebody asked me this evening earlier why I'm not writing a book. And I said the only books that sell now, and I read this from the publisher's journal, was books on self-improvement, on diets and recipes, and that kind of thing. Those are the major categories, recipes or self-improvement, jogging, running, stretching. I think of writing a book on how I cook 3 days a week for a family, 2 hours a day, and how you can cook for the whole week in 6 hours. that book would sell, and then you'd have money for the station or research, right? But why don't people, some people do get these tapes and they have discussion groups. Why can't they sit around and have people in and have friends in common or change your friends and have discussion groups where each one puts in so much a week and you sit in your home one night a week? There are people that are not as interested in the news, such as taking a child away from a woman because it's perfectly taken care of, but her politics aren't as good as the husband who works with a missile base at Lockheed. Why aren't there more people forming a group of World Watchers? So I had a vision, instead of Weight Watchers, that they would turn to World Watchers, which you know is ridiculous because people don't want to know how the president of the Democratic Party was murdered or how the senator was murdered. Somebody called me today, wanted me interested, get me active in the Democratic Party. They said, you listen to Kazoo? No. I said, forget it. I talk about the Democratic Party all the time. If the candidates are worth having and the candidates are murdered, then you don't have a party. If you don't know who murdered them, you don't have a party. If you want your freedom, you have to invest your time, whether it's an hour a week or so much a week. And I would hope someday that maybe there would be groups that would have World Watchers where they evidently have the money. They're still pouring it in. Hunt Foods bought Weight Watchers, $72 million to watch 20 or 30 pounds go from each person. Some have more. But World Watchers could be equivalent to Weight Watchers if people knew that their Earth, they don't know where to put the pollution from 40 years of atomic waste. We bailed out Brazil today and we don't have money for Social Security. There is no provision for your future and there's no interest except in jogging around and getting high on the oxygen exchange or whatever it is you get out of it. So if you want to start a group and contribute those dues to this station under the term of World Watchers, that would be fine. Count your calories without giving it to the corporations that took it over and do it that way. Now, in the last 6 minutes, I do want to talk about Leon Jaworski, who died this week chopping wood, Texas lawyer, Watergate special prosecutor. He was a prosecutor at the Nuremberg trials, which was so important because with the exception of a handful, all of them got off and are running the corporations today. He allegedly, he did force Richard Nixon to surrender 64 tape recordings, but what he did was he took the call from Alexander Haig, again, Fritz Kramer's protege. It was Alexander Haig that hired Leon Jaworski, who brought in Gerald Ford of the Warren Commission. Leon Jaworski got a call. According to the New York Times, his involvement began, and I have many articles on this, with a call from Alexander Haig, then Nixon's chief of staff. How did he become chief of staff? Fritz Kramer put Haig as the chief of staff of the White House, and these were during the horrendous years, you know what went on during this time period. Jaworski was responsible for the plans to pardon Nixon, and Gerald Ford did it officially. Jaworski said, I told Haig, every person criminally involved should be prosecuted. He's lied from the time he first got out of the Bar Association. Big lie. Chappaquiddick was Tony Lasowitz and the White House plumbers and that group involved around Richard Nixon. They had all the Chappaquiddick material in the White House that they took out and weren't charged with taking the files of E. Howard Hunt after they were arrested or while they were looking for him. Criminal material they threw in a river and destroyed. The ITT investigation he debated about didn't go into. The Howard Hughes affair he didn't touch. The Dorothy Hunt plane crash. The murder of a primary witness who was bagwoman for these people. The Martha Mitchell injection where she got her cancer. You think you're home free, you're politically active, get in a hospital or get a needle in your behind and you get the Martha Mitchell or the Jack Ruby cancer. None of these were prosecuted. He left Washington. People in Washington resented some of them that he left without indicting Richard Nixon. He, according to one LA Times article, within the special prosecutor's office, Jaworski stood alone. That's why Richard Nixon is big man in New Jersey, riding around the country, giving interviews all over the world, along with Haig and Kissinger and Kramer's babies and proteges, this Nazi Kramer, because Jaworski let him off the hook. But that comes from a history way back, and incidentally, he was Lyndon Johnson's attorney, Crook Johnson. Can you imagine being the attorney? In 1960, Lyndon Johnson was being sued by several Republicans because he wanted to run for the Senate the same time he was going to run as vice president under John Kennedy. So if Kennedy lost the election to Richard Nixon, he would still be in the Senate. But if Kennedy won the election, he'd become the vice president. so that he was sued by some Republicans, but Jaworski won that, and Crook Lyndon got on that. Now, I only have time to do one or two things on Jaworski, 1 minute on that. There's a book, and then I'll do more next week. We'll go right into Leon Jaworski. The Killing of Corporal Kuntz by Wilma Parnell, P-A-R-N-E-L-L, by Robert Tabor, written in 1981. It's the story of Leon Jaworski's role in hanging five men in an American prison during the war that were not responsible for crushing the head of a person in this prison. It was a scandal. 40,000 Germans were brought to Oklahoma alone in barbed wire. 40,000, while our men were out there in the battlefields and dying in the battles, and London was bombed. I don't have to go into what was going on during World War II. 40,000 were in Oklahoma. One man, Johannes Kuntz, K-U-N-Z-E. His first name is J-O-H-A-N-N-E-S, K-U-N-Z-E. He missed his wife and children. He was killed by the SS directly in the prison. And this book tells how the United States Army needed a scapegoat, and Leon Jaworski was the prosecutor. And these 40,000, there were people, Germans, also in addition to the 40,000, at Fort Sill, Fort Reno, Will Rogers Field, and then out in California and Texas, Arkansas, Mexico, Texas, Louisiana. And the prison was run by the Gestapo, the SS Gestapo. The Nazis ran their seminars under the guise of innocent, innocuous study classes. Now, that's what Fritz Kramer was teaching Nazism to Henry Kissinger in basic training in Army intelligence. They were conducting political seminars, the Nazis, 40,000 of them in Oklahoma prison in 1943, study classes. The men were disciplined. They were severely beaten. If they fraternized with the enemy, which are the Americans or people that didn't like Hitler, or if they questioned the Nazi doctrine, they were punished. And the Gestapo ran the American prisons for the German prisoners in this country. And this particular person had his head crushed in a terrible murder, and five people were charged. It was a military court run by Leon Jaworski. There was violence also in Fort Chaffee, Arkansas, which is where Mark David Chapman was before he shot John Lennon. And this book tells about Jaworski not hanging the people that did the murder and saying you have to understand it was a wartime condition. The book tells about the five defendants neither murdered Kuntz nor had anything to do with it. Unidentified assailants did, but they got off free. They smashed his skull. Leon Jaworski was the prosecutor who hung the innocent people, which was exactly what they were doing in Germany. He also was the investigator at Dachau, where Nazi Fritz Kramer came to this country. They've been working together since World War II, since 1943, if not before. Kuntz was killed. Leon Jaworski was in charge. There were secret trials, secret transcripts, the five brutal men who crushed this man's head. Because he wasn't pro-Adolf Hitler Gestapo in an American prison, the five who were, they couldn't explain where the man was killed or who was there. They were hung, and Jaworski hung them and explained that in the hysteria of war, you do these things. How in the heck was this going on? I wasn't even aware of these things. Were you? I mean, 1943, I was a senior in college at Stanford, about ready to get married, and I knew from nothing. Some of you get discouraged that you think I have a lot of material and information. Remember that I didn't start my actual research till I was 40 years old. I'm 60 now, so that you still have time to get in on it, okay? Now remember, send your pledges to this station. You can call me at the house and pledge it. I'll be here for an hour to take calls. If you have a question, send in and pledge. And then I'll do your question on the air in the weeks to come so that you'll know it's answered. This is Mae Brussel in KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove, California.
The views expressed by Mae Brussel during World Watchers are those of the commentator and do not reflect the opinions of KAZU, its board of directors, or staff.